Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, nutrition, fitness, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Graham Anthony. Today it's a conversation about the occurrence of stroke among those we call millennials. We speak with science writer Dina Fine-Moran about this curious correlation in an article she wrote for Scientific American this month.
And then our next guest is Debbie Lehman. She says writing, that is our own writing, opens us up to new possibilities, helps unblock us, and reveals new pathways toward reinvention and discovery. It changes our perspective in ways that we might not have otherwise seen. Lehman is a local writer and teacher who gives regular writing workshops. She'll join us to talk about an upcoming one that will help you uncover yourself and answer those questions that many of us have as we move through life, like, where do I belong? Who am I? and what is my purpose?
And finally, Edie McConnell is a local yoga practitioner and so much more. We welcome her back on The Mountain Life, this time to talk about how yoga can be a complement to the many other athletic pursuits that we do in this town.
This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital and New Park Town Center, with new retail spaces and a year-round community development. Information about New Park Town Center is available at 801-303-5440. Support of KPCW comes from Zions Bank Concierge-Style Executive Banking Services. Zions Bank. We haven't forgotten who keeps us in business. More information available online at zionsbank.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Graham Anthony. There is a startling and growing body of research that indicates that stroke among U.S. millennials ages 18 to 34 have soared in recent years. Published several weeks ago in Scientific American is an article by our guest, Dina Fine-Moran. There's this startling uptick in stroke, especially in the West and Midwest. Moran explores the research and the science behind this trend. Dina Fine-Moran is an award-winning journalist and the associate editor for health and medicine at Scientific American. She's based in Washington, D.C. and joins us now by phone. Welcome, Dina, to The Mountain Life.
Hi, good morning.
So this is very interesting, and it's a headline that really caught my eye, because we never, ever think of millennials, those between, 18 and 34, as having strokes.
Exactly.
With rare exception.
Absolutely, yeah. So there's been research that's been piling up in recent years that's been looking at this growing trend. Earlier this year, CDC put out numbers that said from the 9-year span from 2003 to 2012, there was a 32% spike in strokes among 18 to 34-year-old women and a 15% increase for men in that same range. So what I was interested in is digging deeper into that data, exploring whether the stroke trend differed by location, whether it be region of the country or urban versus rural settings. And as you mentioned, we found that the West and the Midwest have seen especially worrisome increases among those age groups, and large cities appear to have seen bigger increases than rural areas, which is really interesting. As far as understanding why these trends are occurring, there are some initial guesses, but the answers are really still difficult to parse out. We know from CDC's research earlier this year that looked at hospitalization data records that among this young age group, there are increasing numbers of risk factors, and actually adults have more than one of them in this age group. So, for example, obesity, diabetes, smoking, physical inactivity, and those can have a compounding factor. So if someone who's 18 years old is obese and is smoking and is physically inactive, obviously that can increase his or her risk.
Yeah, I was surprised to see, we live here in Utah. It's a relatively healthy population, especially mm-hmm. in the mountain town, Park City. And I was surprised to see an uptick in smoking among young people.
Yeah.
Is that a reality?
I don't have the numbers in front of me of where smoking increases have happened throughout the country, but as a trend, yeah, young adults are still smoking, whether it be traditional cigarettes or other substances, and that obviously can exacerbate stroke risk. My analysis focused specifically on the same years that CDC looked at, so we could compare apples to apples, and those years were 2003 to 2012, so it's possible if smoking numbers have dropped in your area in recent years, we wouldn't have picked that up.
They'd have to drop from nearly zero in Park City itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the you may have just answered my question. In the 5 years since this study closed, mm-hmm. Are you aware that these trends have continued?
We did include in one part of our analysis, we looked at the latest data that the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality had from their hospitalization discharge records, and that was the 2013-2014 data point. And indeed, those numbers were still going up. As a whole, the stroke rates were still increasing in the 18 to 34-year-old group across all of the regions, South, Midwest, Northeast, and West.
And do you think that there's any basis for this trend to emerge from your ability to detect?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and one I spoke with five stroke experts about who reviewed our analysis. And the question is a complicated one, but the answer is most folks think no, that's not the case. The question would be, because some hospitals may more than others use MRI and imaging to confirm that a stroke has occurred, is there a difference by that, you know, whether it be in an urban setting versus a rural setting, or let's say the Northeast had a norm of giving people brain imaging more than in other regions. But the experts I spoke to said, no, they don't think that's what's occurring here. And that's because if that were just the case, you would expect that stroke rates across the age range would increase in certain areas more than others. And so far, we're not seeing that as the case. Nationally, stroke rates and stroke deaths have actually dropped in recent years. So that trend is at odds with what we're seeing among younger adults.
Well, that is an interesting point that you make, Dina, because mm-hmm. you would think that, I mean, as a population, we're all becoming increasingly obese, increasingly couch sitters, all at the same rate along any given age group. But
right.
you're kind of suggesting that's not true, that it's the millennials that are sitting, I suppose, in front of computers and things.
And what's particularly concerning about stroke among younger adults is, let's say, when you're a younger adult, that is your prime earning years, so you'd have potentially a longer problem in terms of your earning potential and the effect on your family, and if you have young kids, for example, at that age group. And then longer term, more strokes, even relatively mild ones, are worrying because they portend perhaps an upcoming epidemic of worse attacks in another 30 years or so, since survivors' second strokes are more likely to be stronger and potentially fatal. We know that from statistics from prior studies in the past about stroke. That would suggest that since risk factors such as obesity and smoking are cumulative over time, that if someone has a stroke when they're 20, if they have a stroke when they're 50, it'll potentially be more deadly.
Now, I know you're not a medical professional, but I don't really know what the correlation is between what is created, what medical condition is created that makes you stroke if you are a smoker more than the non-smoker.
I see. Right. So what happens when you're a smoker are a variety of things that have to do with the blood flow through your body and damage to a variety of organs, and that can exacerbate your stroke risk, which is why when health groups talk about ways to help prevent stroke, they say there are certain things you should do that I think are true for healthy living in general, namely you should quit smoking, you should try to watch your diet, you should be more physically active if at all possible. And some stroke experts I've spoken to about millennials and stroke risk have also wondered if illicit drug use or drug abuse of prescription drugs might also be a growing factor that is putting young people at risk of stroke. There isn't good data on that yet, but that's something that could be a contributing factor and needs further study.
That seems pretty natural to
right.
address
the
that.
Tricky- Yeah, the tricky thing is a lot of the information we have about strokes, including what we did for our analysis, is we look at hospital discharge records, and it's possible that young people may not be completely forthright when speaking to a doctor or medical professional about their drug use habits, so we might be missing some of that information.
And are you tracking, are these primarily minor strokes or micro strokes, and or are we seeing devastating, life-ending strokes at a in a large number?
Great question. The data I looked at didn't distinguish about what type of stroke it was in terms of the long-term impact, because it was just looking at discharge data. Anecdotally, stroke experts I spoke to said that a stroke among these younger people was often more minor, and that's because they inferred that people who were younger were overall healthier and had less time to have a variety of health conditions have an exacerbatory effect in their body, and so they thought that young people would have more minor strokes.
And regardless, this is a tremendous burden on the individual, their families,
exactly.
and society.
Yeah.
But what is the, can you describe the life of a young person who's encountered this?
Yeah, so if a young person has had a stroke, obviously it depends how severe that stroke is. For some people, they might have to relearn certain aspects of their physical capabilities going on. One stroke victim I spoke with, stroke survivor, that individual talked about how she had memory lapses that she wasn't fully aware of over the following 5 to 10 years that her doctor and care team helped her realize. And so that's actually factored into both her personal and professional relationships, as one might expect. For some folks who've had a more minor stroke, it might just mean some changes to their daily life, for example, being put on an aspirin regimen to help prevent future incidents, future blood clots, and obviously taking steps to live a healthy life in terms of quitting smoking, increasing physical exercise, eating healthier, and then having more regular checkups with his or her medical care team.
Dina, did you find any surprising risk factors? I do know someone who was very physically fit, who had a stroke in his 20s, and it was really surprising to me. But were there other risk factors that you found?
Great question. No, not really. As you point out quite correctly, for some people, stroke, we still don't know why that individual might have had a stroke. It might not be that they had these risk factors. There might be a genetic aspect to it that we haven't yet realized. It might just be a medication that individual had been on might have exacerbated risk. But again, we just don't know.
Yeah, and you talked earlier a little bit about the difference between an urban and rural setting. What were the what did the studies find among that division?
Yeah, so when we looked at the numbers, we saw that large cities appeared to have seen bigger increases than rural areas, but a factor that might be sort of muddying the waters here in terms of our data is that we know that rural hospitals have been closing in increasing numbers in recent years. So it's possible that if someone had a stroke, he or she might seek care at the local hospital that's available, and that might be a more suburban or urban setting as opposed to a rural setting, even though the person lives in a rural setting. So it's hard to make really good sense of what these numbers mean. I spoke with some stroke experts that wondered, without data behind it, but just wondering if pollution in large cities could be a factor exacerbating risk of stroke in those settings. But again, we just don't know.
I have heard, Dina, that living at high altitude can be a factor in depression. Is there any indication that altitude plays into this study?
I don't have any data on that, no.
Well, then generally, what should we be looking for?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we really need to be thinking about is making sure that our young people, as our people in every age, are living the healthiest lifestyle that they can. So again, doing everything you can to quit smoking, to exercise, to eat healthily. If you have a drug abuse issue, whether it be with prescription drugs or street drugs, that you take steps and that your care team takes steps to try to help you move away from that, and try to maximize your physical activity during your daily life. We can't prevent every stroke, but we could do a lot from a from a population level perspective to prevent more strokes than we're preventing today.
Our guest is Dina Fine-Marin. She's an award-winning journalist and the associate editor for health and medicine at Scientific American. She has written this article on the relationship between millennials and stroke. Really interesting article you've written here, Dina. And I just have to ask you before we let you go, is do you take a certain topic that just catches your eye and then you compile all the research and sort of decipher it into a way that's readable? Is that kind of how you approach your job?
Good question. Stories come to me in a variety of ways. That's certainly one of them, just something that piques my interest. Or sometimes even a reader might contact me and ask a question or share a personal story, and that can also raise questions for me. In this situation, it was actually the CDC report that came out earlier this year that piqued my interest. They put out a report in JAMA Neurology that showed this 9-year spike among women and men of this younger age group, and she said, indeed, this looks like it's a real trend that's taking place, and that started me thinking, wondering, well, one, why is this happening, and two, where is this happening? And that led to this story and this investigation.
All right. Well, Dina, thank you so much for joining us today on The Mountain Life.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back after these words. We're heading from stroke among millennials into how you can discover your new self when you learn how to write with local writer and writing teacher Debbie Lehman. When we return, stay with us.
Miller Orthodontics is a proud supporter of The Randy Barton Show. Since 1988, my wife and I have provided a combined 45 years of orthodontic care. For our Invisalign patients, we provide digital scanning and imaging technology that eliminates the need for wet molds of your teeth. More information is at m2ortho.com.
Experience the ride of a lifetime on the Summer Comet bobsled. Cruise down the full length of the Olympic track used during the 2002 Olympic Winter Games. Driven by a professional pilot, participants will experience 15 turns and reach speeds up to 65 miles per hour. It's truly a ride unlike any other. Details at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Graham Anthony, here with Lynn Ware Peak. Our next guest, Debbie Lehman, has one of those stories that makes you want to know more. She is a managing director at Manhattan brokerage firm and financial planner, who also had a love for writing, and she actually always found time to do it. That's a rare thing. Now a Park City resident, Debbie is a freelance writer, writing coach, and developmental editor. And she believes everyone can write. Sometimes all we need is a little help. She teaches various workshops and has an upcoming one for those who are embarking on a next act. As she says, there is a way to creatively age, and she wants to share it with you. Her classes are offered at Temple Har Shalom, and this particular workshop begins on Wednesday, July 26th. So you have time to think about it. Think about it some more, and then sign up. Debbie Lehman, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Great to have you.
So, Debbie, how did you make that big transition from Wall Street to
It's a big transition. A lot of writing. I had to write through my process of doing this. Well, I was on Wall Street for about 10 years in Manhattan, and then we moved, my husband and I moved with our young family to Salt Lake about a little over 20 years ago. And about, it's actually going on 13 years. I had been in the financial world for over 20 years, and I just felt like I needed my creativity to come out. It was just time. I needed to do something different and make a change.
And so were you your first client, or did you were you someone else's client that led you down this path?
I was my first client. I started writing stories. Actually, the first story I wrote, which got published, was about my husband who became a vegan, who was a carnivore and overnight became a vegan. And it was called Surviving the Born Again Vegan. And so that was my first piece to be published. And then from there, I just was very fortunate to, I seem to write about my own experiences, a lot of personal essays, because that's kind of how I process my thoughts. So my poor family members, because I tended to write a lot about them.
Well, I think it's so wonderful. And as you say, this first published article about your husband becoming a vegan, it's like, I think that in this creative process that you access after so many years in the financial industry, which I guess some could say is creative, but most would probably say it's not very creative. But you have taught yourself, and now you teach others, about how to take everyday stories and make them into something really entertaining. And those are the best ones because it connects us to human nature.
Exactly, exactly. And I especially in my upcoming workshop, Creative Aging, which I've taught down in Salt Lake a few times this past year, it's really great for people going through transition and accessing parts of themselves, rediscovering parts of themselves that they wouldn't normally tap into if they didn't really have that contemplation and those writing prompts to get them thinking in new ways.
That's the other part that I find really fascinating in reading through your website, which is debbielehman.com, D-E-B-B-I-E-L-E-A-M-E.
M-A-N.
Okay.
L-E-A-M-A-N.
Yeah. Okay. Is so much that, you know, people think of writers as someone who has this knack for using words and combining them in the right way that makes them interesting. You approach writing more from this is a process, and it's a process of uncovering yourself, which is, that's so great. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I call it expressive writing, which is not a new term. It's definitely been around. And, you know, you don't need to be a fabulous writer. This is not high school English. This is really about just uncovering who you are and unpacking what's going on. And the writing actually works in such an interesting way because somehow it goes from your brain directly into your hand, whether you're writing pen and paper or you're on your laptop, and the filter's gone. And it's amazing what can come out. It's really fun. And it's really fun to work with people or the class, the participants, because sometimes they'll write, I'll give a writing prompt, and then after it's done, they'll say, oh my God, I hadn't thought about that in years, or I'd forgotten about that aspect of myself.
And so, Debbie, are you teaching a step-by-step process, or is it an evolutionary guide?
It's an evolutionary guide. So I take people in this particular workshop, I take people through all aspects of what one might be thinking about when you're in transition, because I've been in a lot of transitions myself. This is the kind of class that I would have wanted to have. It's definitely evolutionary. So we talk about different topics like loss, regret, because I think we get to a stage in life and you have a loss of identity. So we explore that a little bit. Regret. We also talk about taking stock of your life and rediscovery, moving out of your comfort zone and letting go of things that you may be holding on to. And this is all done through writing prompts.
So are you taking referrals from therapists?
You know, it's interesting. Sure. Absolutely. Therapists. I just finished a writing through grief program, and I definitely had a lot of referrals from therapists.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
So it's so funny that, last night I was at a 4th of July barbecue, and I was talking to someone who recently retired, but retired pretty young. And she was in that process of just reevaluating everything about her life because she had this big productive job and lots of fulfillment that came with it. But she was so excited to be retired. And then all of a sudden she gave herself like a year to ski and golf. And suddenly she was going, okay, what's next? Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to look at people. We all have this thing that maybe we did before our careers, or these thoughts about, oh, I'd like to, you know, learn another language, or I'd like to learn how to play the guitar. Well, then later on in life, like, are those, how do you know if those are still sort of the goals that you have or the things that you really want to do?
Well, and that's interesting that you say that, because sometimes it's trial and error. sometimes just trying things and realizing, you know what? I don't think I really wanted to learn to play the piano anymore or the saxophone or go sailing. You know, so you try something. When I left in investments, I was like a, you know, creative junkie, you know, and I was playing the piano and I was doing yoga and I was learning a new language and writing, and everything else seemed to drop away. Yeah. So I think you have to just try a lot of different things, and that's okay. It's exploration. And yeah.
So I'm just dying to know what some of your writing prompts are. Can you give us a few examples?
Sure.
Because I'm picturing being in your class. Actually, I'm picturing sending this friend of mine that I was talking to last night.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, we have a lot of fun in the class, I have to say. And you don't need writing experience. Just want to get that out there. Okay, so a couple of writing prompts. Who are you now when you're not who you used to be?
Oh, what if someone just writes down, I don't know, period.
I would say keep writing.
Keep writing.
Keep the pen. Just keep the pen moving, because I think you'd be surprised what comes out. Another one, if we're, you know, we get all the bad stuff out of the way, the loss and regret, because you got to get that out so you can move forward. If I could do it over again, I would ... Here's another one. Think about all of your jobs, ideas for work, hobbies, passions, and find a common denominator, a common thread. Ask yourself, what do I stand for? What is my core? Here's another one. What would you do if you were willing to take a risk and weren't afraid? And we also do a lot of exercise of brainstorming. List five hobbies that sound like fun. List five classes that sound like fun. List five things you used to enjoy doing. And then, when was the last time you did that? But we take them through. It's a four-week program. And so there's a lot of time to kind of explore and go through different steps on how you move forward.
And so do you have a goal of developing a particular product from this, or your students producing narrative prose or poetry or anything?
You can do
it
anything you'd want. Sometimes the goal could be, and if participants want, to write an essay, because sometimes when you write a complete story and you have a full story arc, you come to a really good understanding. But it's really up to the participants. And people write, and if you want to share your work after we do our writing prompts, you know, I give people about 10, 15 minutes. We can share as a group. You can share or not share. You know, I've had people who are sharing all the time, and then people who just say, I'm not going to talk. So, yes, it helps. It helps to write an essay. I became part of my creative aging. I became a ski teacher 2 years ago in my late 50s and was kind of having fun with it, but struggling a little bit with just the demands of having to be there when it was 7 below 0. And so I actually had to write an essay about my experience. I mean, that was just me. I had to kind of get that out.
So. And what is your happiest client or customer walk away with?
A new perspective, and I have to say transformation. A lot of them, you know, they'll come into class and say, second class, I had a woman come in and say, that's it. I'm moving out of state to be closer to my daughter. You know, you've got me thinking in new ways. Another guy who hadn't backpacked in 30 years said, I'm going to try it again. I'm going to go hiking. You know, it's so, I think people make changes. It's really interesting.
Something about putting it in writing. Something makes a big difference.
It does, you know, because I think we all, especially when we're so busy in our lives and the first half of our lives, you know, we're raising families, doing careers, and we don't have time for contemplation. And this really allows some quiet time and thinking time, really just for yourself. So you do come up with a new perspective, and writing helps clarify thoughts.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious about your process of fulfilling your creative self, even when you were working in the hustle and bustle in Manhattan and the financial industry. And you said that it's like you needed this outlet and you had all of this creative. I'm kind of the opposite, where when I'm in you know, like right now I'm in a job that's not that creative, but I have been before in a job. And I feel like my creativity there's direct correlation to the job I'm doing. And so it makes me think that it's dangerous to shut down your creativity when you happen to be in a job that's not very creative. So what would you say to folks that have that little struggle? Because you obviously transcended that struggle in a big way.
Well, I did. I did. I think because I've always been writing, journaling, ever since I was like 12, you know, with my little diary and a lock and a key. But I also found ways to be creative in my job in Manhattan. So I'd always volunteer to do any of the writing that needed to get done. I would take a class, you know, I took a jewelry making class in New York, you know, that kind of thing. And it's, you know, I think you just find time. You know what? Actually, studies have shown that if you write 15 minutes a day, that's it, for 4 days in a row, it can make a change in the way you think. So it doesn't have to be a major deal. You know, you could just write 10, 15 minutes a day. Any time. You could do it in the morning, at lunch, before bed.
Or right after our yoga practice.
After yoga. There you go.
Which we're also trying to find time for in our day.
I know.
So your class will begin here later this month. What will the class look like? And can you profile the people you expect in Park City to show up?
I would say anyone who is in transition. We say 55 plus, but really 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, it doesn't matter. But anybody who's going through a transition, someone who's thinking about retirement, someone who's in between jobs, mm-hmm. Someone, a spouse who might be getting underfoot from another spouse, and you know, I think I'm thinking
of that expression,
underfoot, and you know, needs some kind of outlet to figure out what to do next. So, anybody in transition or has that niggling feeling of God, you know, I feel like there's something more, and I'm not really sure what that is, and I need to access that.
So great. So it starts on July 26th.
Correct.
And you go for four
consecutive Wednesdays from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And it is sponsored through Jewish Family Service, which is non-denominational. Everyone's welcome. And it's at Temple Har Shalom here in Park City.
Great.
Great facility. Great program.
Yes. And to register, should I give registration
yes,
information?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so you could check my website. Lynn had given you that, but it's debbielehman.com, and that'll have all the registration information. Or you can call Jewish Family Service in Salt Lake, 801-746-4334.
Excellent.
Yeah.
The thing, when I notice it's from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, and have you noticed how hot it's been recently? And what a nice thing to do with that part of your day, the hottest part of your day. Go inside and let your creative juices flow.
Absolutely.
I like that. I just have to mention this other book. We've interviewed these authors of this book a couple of times on this show. The book is called Designing Your Life, and it's by two Stanford University professors. They actually are in the industrial design program there, but they also co-teach the most popular class at Stanford, and it is called by the same name, Designing Your Life. And they approach, their names are Bill Burnett and Dave Evans, but there's this tie-in here to what you're doing, because they take you through exercises in this book that does the same sort of thing about finding what you like. And maybe it's, I don't know, this millennia's, what was that book that we all read when we were in college?
What color is your parachute? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And so wonderful stuff, though. So I applaud what you're doing and encourage people to look you up. And you have a great website talking about all the other things you do and links to all your wonderful articles as well. So, Debbie Lehman, thank you for joining us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And we'll be right back after this to talk about, well, yoga, another thing that you can do to nurture yourself. with Edie McConnell when we return. Stay with us.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson from Davidson Orthopedics, proud sponsor of KPCW. We're pleased to announce the opening of our New Park City office in New Park at 1122 Center Drive, right behind Jupiter Bowl. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Manning, the director of golf at Park Meadows Country Club, a proud KPCW supporter. We've planned an active season of golf events, clinics, and lessons for all players on our Jack Nicklaus course minutes from Park City Main Street. More information at parkmeadowscc.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with Graham Anthony. Well, Edie McConnell is a well-known yoga teacher in Park City with 15 years of teaching experience. She's taught all sorts of yoga classes, from prenatal yoga to yoga for athletes, in all sorts of places, from a Fortune 500 boardroom to a converted gas station. You can find her at the Shop Yoga Studio on Tuesday and Thursday mornings, where she teaches an advanced level creative flow class. She joins us this morning to talk about, among other things, how the practice of yoga can complement the other sports that we practice here in this town, where athletic pursuits reign supreme. Good morning to you, Edie. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Lynn. Hi, Graham.
Is the converted gas station is the Shop, right? Or no, what was it before?
No,
wasn't it a...
The Shop was the Shop for the high school. When the high school was where the library is now.
I can't believe I didn't know that.
Yeah, the converted gas station was in Mississippi. A woman had taken this gas station and turned it into a yoga studio. So we said that you used to go there to fill up your car, and then when it became a yoga studio, you went there to fill up your soul.
Wow.
Yeah.
I forget that you're from down south.
That's right.
So how was it when you first started teaching yoga 15 years ago in the South? For some reason, I picture that yoga is not quite what it is in the South as it is in, some places I've been, like San Diego, for example. I was there over the weekend. It's huge. Everyone's walking around with a yoga mat under their arm.
Yeah, I think there's... yoga can be different wherever you go. I think sometimes you just find like-minded people who are interested in what you're interested in. So 15 years ago when I started teaching, there weren't as many people going to class. There certainly weren't as many men going to class. And I think as we've all become more aware of the benefits of yoga in our lives, more and more people are attracted to going.
Yeah. So... bring us here to Park City, and you talk about kind of blending your yoga practice with your intense athletic pursuits. And I ran into you in the store the other day, and you had just, you know, she was all sweaty. She looked great. She was coming from CrossFit.
She was glowing.
She was glowing. Oh, yeah.
Right, Graham, I was glowing.
I have my time in the South. I know the difference.
Yeah. So you, too, combine these two practices.
Yeah, I love CrossFit. I love running. Running is one of my favorite physical activities. I'm sort of a road biker. I probably don't do it enough to really call myself a road biker. So, and I love yoga. I run into people like you in the store, although we didn't talk about this in particular, and sometimes people, you know, I'll see them in the grocery store, and maybe they'll be at the other end of the aisle, and I can sort of tell they're like, oh God, there's the yoga teacher, I haven't been to class in so long, and they're trying to avoid me. Or they will come up to me and talk, and they'll say, oh, I just haven't had time for yoga, I'm doing all these other things. And I get it, I do a lot of things too. But a yoga practice can really complement all the other physical activities that we do. It depends on what you need from your practice and what you need from the other activities that you're doing. So a yoga practice can really help just physically in the body with stretching and moving things around. And if you do an activity like golf or tennis that can be really one-sided, you're swinging that club from one direction most of the time, or the racket from one direction most of the time, then a yoga practice can really help to get you more balanced in your body.
I can speak from experience that the happiest fitness level I've ever achieved was when I was consistently adding yoga to my practice, to my having a practice in addition to my other activities. But somehow it's tough to fit into a schedule, and it's been a lot of fun. When I came to Park City some years ago, there was the yoga in the park that drew me back in, and I've really enjoyed that. Are there more and more opportunities for outdoor yoga in Park City?
I think so. So yoga in the park is still happening. Lululemon sponsors that. It's free. It happens in the summer on Tuesday nights right in front of the Miners Hospital, and there are different teachers every week. So that's a great way for somebody who wants to be outside, or somebody who perhaps doesn't have money for their yoga class, to, you know, that doesn't fit into their budget. That goes on. And then there are other outdoor yoga opportunities that are not free. Park City Yoga Adventures takes people out on an adventure, like being on a stand-up paddleboard, or going on a hike, or in the wintertime going snowshoeing, and then you do yoga outside or in the winter. Sometimes there's a...
I've done hot yoga, but I haven't done cold yoga.
Well, if you do it right, Graham, it'll warm you right up, even if the room is cold. But it is hard if you're doing a lot of other activities to fit another activity in. So it can be hard just in terms of your time. It can be hard in terms of your body. We really push ourselves really hard here. So if you think, well, I've been on a 2-hour bike ride, my body just does not feel like going to a yoga class and exerting myself. You can find a yoga class where you're not necessarily getting a sweat on, or it's not a cardiovascular activity, but it's more of something that is a sanctuary for you. It's a place where you can let your mind calm down a little bit. You can let your body calm down, stretch it, move it around, maybe do some strengthening for your body, and then you can get to that place where you were when you returned to your yoga practice.
That, I have to say, is the best part of yoga in my life was, and I know can be, that it's one practice, one exercise that I don't even try to control. And I love being in an instruction that's narrative and carries me along, and I just listen. I do what I'm told. And I don't do that in a lot of situations in my life. So it's a wonderful experience for me. There are lots of things that I'm never going to master, but I can always improve on.
Exactly. So that's part of that sanctuary of a yoga practice that I was talking about. When you get there, if you find a class and a teacher whom you trust, then you can just sort of let yourself go and let that teacher guide you through. You don't have to look at the trail map. You don't have to make the training plan. You have to show up, and not just show up physically, but also show up mentally and be there. And then it can really have big benefits for your other activities.
Do you ever see people coming in? I love the mindfulness and sort of the sanctuary component of yoga, but I can also imagine for some people that is intimidating in and of itself. Like, they're almost scared to go into the sanctuary place or have too much mindfulness because, golly, what could happen then? You know, and can you see it when it happens?
Yeah, I totally get that. There's a little bit of a mystery surrounding yoga. I mean, there's a separate language. We use the ancient Sanskrit language in class. So there's that language problem, could be a problem. And then, you know, all the poses have names. And if you don't know the names of the poses and you get there and you're sort of lost, so it can be a little bit intimidating. It can be a little bit, what have I stepped into? But I think it's important to find a class and a teacher that work for you, and trust that it's going to be okay. If you do become really mindful, you become aware of your body, you become aware of what's happening for you mentally and perhaps emotionally, whatever happens there on the mat, it's going to be okay. The yoga studio should be a place of safety for everybody, no matter what happens in there.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Edie McConnell. She is a popular local yoga teacher. She teaches the class on Tuesdays and Thursday mornings at the Shop Yoga Studio here in Park City, in Old Town Park City. And I'm one of those people who stopped long ago avoiding you in the grocery store because I haven't been to your class in about 7 years, I readily admit. I probably apologize for about the first two. But so I forget what time it's offered.
9 to 10:30 a.m.
Yeah. And it's pretty advanced. And you call it creative flow. Is that what it was called? Yeah. Advanced level creative flow class. So explain that.
Yeah. My boss, David Bells, came up with that title for it. So it is an advanced class. And it's called creative flow because we move pretty quickly from one pose to the next. And I try to put them together in a creative way. And I also allow a lot of leeway for the students to be creative. So Graham might be able to be in a posture in one way, and Lynn, you might be able to be in the posture in a different way. And it's important for you to express yourself in that posture. And know that, you know, Graham, you said you can maybe not, you can always advance in your postures. Know that you may not be where Lynn is in that posture, but you are right where you should be. So that is also part of the creativity, is the way that I connect the poses for the students, but then also what they bring to it, letting their own activity come out there.
So you see athletes in this town all the time coming in there, and newcomers to yoga or long-term practitioners. Is there a particular model you use to really, as we opened this with, complement those activities through yoga?
I think somebody who is an athlete who is interested in yoga or interested in restarting yoga needs to ask themselves, what do they want from their yoga practice? If you want to have a place where you can mindfully stretch, where you can really tune into your body and connect body and mind, maybe a gentle yoga class is what you should look for. We are so lucky here. We've got incredible yoga all over town. So maybe gentle is the kind of yoga that might work best for you. If you're looking for ways to become more coordinated, maybe the creative flow class that I teach and that other people in town teach as well would be good, to learn how to gracefully move from one pose into another, using both right and left sides. We're all, you know, one side dominant, or most of us are. So I think you have to ask yourself, what do I want from a practice, and how much time do I have to spend on it? Do I have an hour and a half for a class? Do I have an hour for a class? Do I have 10 minutes? I think it's always best to get to a class if you can, to have a skillful teacher guide mm-hmm. you, and also to be in community with other people. But sometimes we just don't have enough time in the day for that. So if you're going to be doing your 15 minutes of writing every day, as your previous guest said, and you're working and then you're doing your physical pursuits, then even 10 minutes of mindfulness and maybe mindful movement will be your yoga practice.
I would love to get that in.
Are those 5 minutes in the morning I do each day of any use? You put a limit on 10 minutes there.
Absolutely. Okay. Five minutes are better than no minutes at all.
Okay, that's what I want to hear. So yoga also means balance is a critical element to holding poses. And I have found the most the greatest benefit, as certainly as we age, balance helps us participate and be strong in other activities. Can you address that?
Yeah, I think balance in two ways is important as we age. One way is the physical balance, which I think you were referring to. Because if you start to fall and you practice balancing, maybe you'll be able to right yourself instead of falling on over and perhaps injuring yourself. So if you practice being physically balanced,
then when you get off balance accidentally through tripping or somebody pushing you or whatever, then maybe you'll be better able to right yourself. And the other way that balance is important as we age is just striking a balance in our lives in general. Striking a balance with how much time we spend on the different activities that we do. For many of us, there are times in our lives, and your previous guest, Debbie, referred to this, where we have to do the things we have to do. There's not a lot of leftover time. There's not a lot of discretionary time. And hopefully, as we get older, we're able to be a little bit more balanced and learn how to manage our time so that it really brings our souls into a place of balance.
Perfect segue into a third kind of balance, and that is the balance between the antagonist and the protagonist muscles. And I want to ask you, it's a personal issue I have, but I know that because I have it, a lot of people in this town do. I'm a mountain biker, so my quads are developed. And what does that mean happen to my hamstrings? Because every time I come to yoga, I tend to, I don't know if I damage my hamstrings, or I kind of go too deep in a pose, and it's always the hamstring attachments up near your bottom.
Right.
And so do you see that a lot? Because I guess I don't have balance between those muscles.
I do see that. So if you have an activity you do, like mountain biking for you, where the quads are dominant, the muscles on the fronts of the thighs are dominant, then the muscles on the back of the thighs, the hamstrings, are probably not being used as much. You do use those in cycling some, but not as much as the quads. So you have to work on strengthening those and then also lengthening both sets of those muscles. So the quads and the hamstrings are complementary muscles, and you need to work them both and stretch them both. Same thing with the upper body, biceps and triceps. We're strengthening both and stretching both. And then another thing in terms of balance for a sport like mountain biking is that you're leaning over a lot. Uh-huh. There's a lot of forward bending in mountain biking. And so it's really, you could bring your body into greater balance if you would practice some back bending. And that doesn't mean that you have to do Cirque du Soleil back bends. It just means that you could even in your chair, lean back over your chair and just open your chest up from time to time. That's something, you know, all of us could do throughout the day, even if we can't get to a yoga class and spend, you know, a dedicated hour and a half on that. I see you both sitting up a little bit taller and backbending. I like it.
Amazing how much better I can breathe doing that.
So, yeah, even if you can't get to a class, you know, three times a week or whatever your goal is, you can be mindful, and your yoga practice will help you be more mindful in balancing that forward bending action of mountain biking with a little bit of backbending.
I love it. Edie McConnell, thank you so much for coming in today and joining us. We always love when you come on The Mountain Life.
My pleasure. Thank you,
Lynn. Maybe Graham and I will just make it into that 9 a.m.? 9 to 10:30
That's it.
Class one of these days, months, years.
Very soon. Can you teach my bike to better balance? Because it keeps falling. It can't be me.
Well, maybe you need to take it into the shop.
There you go. Thanks, Edie. And we'll be back after these words.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And thanks to Park Meadows Country Club, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Phil Davidson Orthopedics,